ॐ जननीं शरदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोश्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः। ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ, मे ब्रह्मन् बेस्टव अपॉन अस बोथ ए फ्रूट ऑफ नॉलेज, मे वी बोथ अटेन द एनर्जी टू एक्वायर नॉलेज, मे व्हाट वी बोथ स्टडी रिवील द ट्रूथ, मे वी चेरिश नो इल फीलिंग टुवर्ड ईच अदर। ओम पीस 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 बी अन टू ऑल। वी आर स्टडीइंग द sixth section of the Brahmananda Valli. In our last class we have seen how Brahman had created this world and then he had entered it. There is a wonderful commentary by Shankaracharya. What is the meaning of entry? I would be very brief here because these arguments and the answers, objections raised by the opponents are doubts created by our own minds when we are studying these things. Shankaracharya's method of explaining in the Bhashyas, he anticipates upon studying the original and also in the commentary, we may have some doubts, but usually we have to take care that these doubts are raised by highly learned scholars opposite to Advaita Vedanta. All of them are clubbed together as Purvapakshi, opponent. Purvapakshi means opponent. This is so that we can clarify our own doubts. That is a very wonderful thing we have to understand. But for normal devotees like us, we may not enter into it, but it is good to have some higher intellectual understanding, comprehension, so that we can enjoy the Bhashyam and understand the original mantras of the Upanishad also in a much, much better way. So, tat srishtva tadeva anupravishat. I will give you in brief, in a very simplified manner. Here is a person and he wanted to have a bigger house and he bought some piece of land suitable. He got it, got the house constructed and then he entered. This is what we normally understand by the word he entered. So you enter your house after going out. So, now the opponent raises a question. He was also, you have to understand, a very learned person, studied the same Upanishads, but totally from a different viewpoint. So he says, sir, is questioning Advaitin, who is none other than Shankaracharya, or it may be his followers. You say, Brahman is all-pervading, anantam, satyam, Jnanam Anantam Brahma. So, how did he enter? Is it like a person who builds a house and fixes an auspicious date for the first entrance into the house? Griha Pravesha. How is it possible? Because Brahman has created. That means what he is and what he created, are they two separate objects? Then it is possible, like I am separate, my house is separate, I can enter, I can also exit, I can do whatever I like. So is it like that? Then there are enormous objections. Keep in mind, all of the objectors are very learned people. And they raise a lot of questions, and it is a great intellectual feast, so to say, even to understand mind-boggling things are there, and this called Anupravesha Shruti. Texts of Shruti means Upanishads, etc., Vedic texts, dealing with this subject of entry. Anupravesha means entering into something. Space entering into a pot. How can space enter into a pot? This is called Ghatakasha. That which did not enter is called Mahakasha. And then supposing an empty pot is created, and as soon as the pot is ready, we already find there is a space inside. Space means you can keep many things there. Emptiness is called space. So you can put water or any blessed thing you like there. So did space really enter there? And even we can try to understand. It is not that difficult. No, it was there before. Now a small bit of it is enclosed. So it did not enter. Rather, the pot enclosed a particular piece of space. And even that is also not finally not accepted, because I have referred to this many times. Even that form of the pot, which is clay, is also the product of Akasha only. So the Atman manifested itself. Manifestation is different from creation. We have to understand that. Supposing a person had created, like just now as I said, a house, or it can be a shirt also. So he puts on the shirt. That means what? This person has entered into that shirt. But we have to keep in mind, shirt is a different object. The person is a different object. So here in this example, the clay out of which the pot is made. And when we say it is made, we have to understand, previously, before the creation of the pot, clay was without any form, therefore without any specific name, excepting it is for our recognition and to separate it from wood, from metal, etc., we call it clay. Generalized clay. Generalized existence of clay. But suddenly, we take a bit of the clay and then shape it in a particular way, with a particular purpose in mind, and as soon as it is made like that, immediately it encloses a small bit of space for our purpose of utility, we call it. So this is a small pot. We can only keep certain things, a small amount of things inside this pot. Pot, Akasha means empty, emptiness. That's what we have to say. So is really a space has entered there? No. This particular form has just seemingly enclosed, but not really. But the second most important point for us is to understand that there is a specialized transactional utility. Simply, space is there, a big maidan is there, so you can't pour water there, you can't put any liquid, and even if you put solid things like rice, grains, etc., etc., they will not be protected and they cannot be preserved because of the inclement weather, etc., rain, etc. So we make, there is a particular purpose in view, and with that purpose we create some enclosed space. It could be of wood, it could be Maharaja's gold, it could be diamond studded box, whatever it is. So what we need to understand here, that clay has not created, clay itself assumed certain names and forms. But when we are discussing about this pot space, some doubts will come. You put this pot, and it seems space is divided inside the pot, outside the pot. But really, it is a misunderstanding by your intellect. But what about that pot itself? Is it not like a wall enclosing? For that, the final answer is, if you go back to its cause. So everything on earth, it is, pot is only an example. The whole of the earth, which is called Prithvi, that Prithvi is the effect of water. And that water is the effect of fire. And that fire is the effect of air. And air is the effect of space. And space is nothing but the effect of Atman. So everything is Brahman. Because we are ignorant, we think the space outside is separate and the space inside is separate. But that is purely our ignorance. It has nothing to do with real facts. So what does it mean? There are certain very important points Shankaracharya raised, answered, and for our convenience sake, first of all, did Brahman create this world? The final answer is seemingly created. Why do we say seemingly created? Because in our state of ignorance, we see everything separate. What is our normal experience in this world? Every animal gives birth, especially females give birth to offspring. Then what do we see? The offspring is separate and the parents are separate. So a potter makes a pot. The potter is separate. Pot is separate. A carpenter makes a chair. Carpenter is separate. And the chair is separate. This is our normal experience. So we presume two things. One is the creator. Another is the creator. Created. But according to Advaita, and by the way, this first view, God created everything, is called Parinama Vada. Parinama Vada. Vada means theory or belief. But the Advaitic theory is called Vivarta Vada. Like mistaking, because of semi-darkness, a rope for a snake. So, we are mistaking something which never changes, which has not become anything, into something which has become something. As if, like a potter, God also is sitting there and creating. That is where the problems come. That why God created some people with a diamond spoon, some people with a golden spoon, some with silver spoon, some with wooden spoon. At least that is much better. Some with no spoon, etc. So why God is so partial? That is the problem that we encounter every day of our life, especially when we are unhappy. We never question when we are happy. Okay. So there is Advaitavadins, they say Vivartavada. What is Vivartavada? A rope is mistaken as if it is a snake. Now the point is, did the rope ever become a snake? No. Never. Then why do I see it? We have to question ourselves. Do all of us see it? Suppose somebody is there, an owl is there. You know, if the owl sees really a snake, then the snake will disappear from there. Because the owl will come and swallow it. And owl is supposed to be having excellent night vision. So that is why she is the Vahana of Lakshmi Devi. He who keeps awake day and night like an owl, noting all the market changes that are going on, regime changes that are going on, because every the market value goes up and down, not depending upon many factors, production, and then what is called transportation, or lack of rain, or change of regime, change of government, change of policy, many things are there. Nobody knows why it happens. So, a person who is very intelligent notes down, his likelihood is that person becomes richer. Anyway, coming back to our point is that why did Brahman really create this world according to the dualistic schools. Second, according to Advaita theory, really is Brahman appearing like a rope being mistaken for a snake? Does everybody see it? No. Only the person whose eyesight is very poor and light is very poor and he is frightened of a snake and he had bad experience with some water snake. So all these conditions make. The point is, where is the mistake? Whose mistake is that? It is not the ropes, it is not the snakes, it is purely our intellectual mistake. This is called vivartavada. Seemingly we see the creation. There is no creation. But since we don't understand it, the scripture takes pity upon us and then it comes down to our level. Then our question is, why did God create this universe, Srishti? Then you say, yes, yes, who has created? God has created. And why has he created? Is because he is getting bored, being alone? No. Yes, he is doing it so that you can exhaust your purvajanma karma. So it is purely for the sake of your exhausting the past karma and as well as creating, hopefully, a better new karma. So that is how the explanation is given. But even that also finally is not allowed. So that Advaitic theory of creation called Vivartavada, there is a problem there. According to Advaita, there is no creation at all. Then why am I seeing creation? I am part of the creation. Yes, you are thinking you are part of the creation, just like in your dream, you think of creation. You are in America or in Mars, and either you are enjoying or you are suffering. So you see all those things and think absolutely that is real and true and act and react. And when you wake up, what do you say? You blame yourself. So is Brahman dreaming like that? Even though it is said, it is the whole creation. I myself have said it is Brahman's dream called Leela. Actually, it is not true because everything we are assuming, presuming that my thought is Brahman's thought. My mind is Brahman's mind. Just as I dream, Brahman also dreams. Just as I awake, Brahman also wakes up. These are all because of the problem of the existence of my own mind. What happens in the deep sleep state? Nobody sleeps. Nobody is awakened. Nobody is dreaming. So it is, there is no srishti. There is no bondage, there is no sadhaka, there is no sadhana, there is no mukti. It is all thoughts. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandhamokshayoho. This is called Advaitic view. So, but we are experiencing for now, because of our deep ignorance, there is a creation, there is a variety of creation, and each one of us go through happiness as well as unhappiness. And therefore, we question when we are not happy. Nobody, I have not found anybody questioning God, why have you made me so lucky? Why did you make me born with a diamond spoon? And why did you make me so happy? Not a single question in the past, present, and will not arise in future also. So, our seeing evil also is part of our ignorance only. Don't you see people suffering in your dream? When you wake up, do you see it? A person who knows the truth, he never questions these things because he has no mind at all. Neither there is a question, not that he got some real true answers. There is no question, there is no answer because the instrument of both question and answer is totally absent in that person's mind. But we have to be uplifted. That is why the scripture comes down to our level, accepts the reality of the creation, and this is called Adhyaropa. Adhyaropa means superimposition. But even the word superimposition is understood only when we delve deep into this Vedantic study. You go and stop any ordinary person in the street and say that, do you know what is the meaning of Adhyaropa? He never says Adhyaropa. And yet, he undergoes Adhyaropa all the time. How do we know? Because, suppose, just imagine, I am giving you only imaginary examples. So a young man thinks this young woman is an angel that had come down from heaven. He marries and he is not very happy afterwards. Then he thinks, I have committed a wrong thing. And then he starts searching for somebody else, thinking, I will find a perfect person in this world. Who is a perfect person? I remember a beautiful quotation somewhere. There was a very busy woman executive who was the wife of somebody, and she gave birth to a child, and she can't leave her office work. So she put up an advertisement and then gave the task to an agent to find out a nurse or somebody to take care of her child. And this lady put certain conditions. She should be like this, like this, like this, a large catalogue of virtues, and then gave it to the agent. And she was waiting, and no reply came. One day she came to the agent and said, how come? Did you put up an advertisement? Then the agent laughed and said, madam, you read what conditions you have put on. And in this world, so far as I know, nobody will fit in this description. You are the only person who fit in the description. So you yourself have to take care of your own child. What am I talking about? That if we are encountering our and chasing our desires, trying to find out, I will find something perfect. Not only a person, but any object also. A perfect phone, a perfect laptop, a perfect environment, perfect house, perfect wife, perfect husband, perfect children. It is doomed to failure from the very beginning. But it serves, the world serves purpose, that is to teach us a lesson. That's what Swami Vivekananda said, this world is school where we learn our lessons. Then how to live in this world? That is what we learn in this school called Brahmacharya Ashrama. Then we get married, then we practice all the lessons we have learned, what to do, what not to do. That is why it is called gymnasium. Swami Vivekananda said, life is a gymnasium. And when we do, we become very strong. That means we progress in spiritual life. And then everything becomes crystal clear. This is all my dream, my own created dream. And I enjoy. And that life is a circus. Life is a school, life is a gymnasium, and life is a circus. It's a gradual progress. First you know what to do, second you do, third if you do properly, then everything becomes absolutely enjoyable. This is the purpose. So what are we talking is, first of all, we question only when we are not happy, and we attribute this unhappiness to everything outside, excepting ourselves. At last we wake up, and that is the purpose of Avidya Maya. It is not to delude us, but it is to teach us a great lesson. And in Advaitic tradition, so this creation at our level, the existence of the creation, the reality of the creation, and the contradictions in the creation we find, all this is called Adhyaropa. Adhyaropa means we superimpose. Marvelous word. What is superimposition? Our thoughts. I see a person, I label him. He is a good person. Another person, not so good. Another person, very bad person. This object, wonderful. The change has to be brought within our own thought, and that is the purpose of Avidya Maya. Not to delude us, not to make us suffer, but slowly to train. Even this statement brings up also certain questions, that why should God appear like this? Of course, you cannot approach Brahman, because when you approach, you are approaching Brahman. It is like a very dry faggot approaching a blazing fire. You are very angry, blazing with anger, on fire, and the moment you approach in this condition, you are happily absorbed by the greatest fire in the world called Brahman. You will not exist anymore. And there is no questioner, there are no questions, there are no, of course, answers, etc. So, Adhyarupa. It is only to answer this Adhyarupa that this creation is said, then Brahman entered. What is the way? Apavada. Apavada means slowly. We have to get it into our brains that everything depends upon God. It is God's grace which can liberate us. And where is that God? Within us. And where is He within us? Hridaya kamala mathye rajitam nirvikalpa. So He is shining. Jyoti rajyoti ujjvala hridi kandara. That is the real purpose. You have to understand. And this is the only purpose. Don't go on questioning. It is, I am responsible means what? My mind is responsible. My mind means my thoughts. My thoughts can be helpful or unhelpful. So, in the past also, my actions followed my thoughts. I created a mess. Even goodness is also a mess. Because from the highest standpoint, goodness also creates punarjanma, rebirth. We have to go beyond both evil and also good. But we turn towards that only after a long time of experience. So according to Advaita, first of all there is no creation. But I see it, yes, because you see it. And some Swamis, especially Advaitic teachers, make a wonderful point. So after hearing this kind of talk, somebody comes and says, Swami, previously I thought I understood something. Now you have thoroughly confused me. Swami asks, what is the confusion? So whatever you say, whether God created or God became, it doesn't matter. Whether it is Parinamavada, Vivartavada, doesn't matter. But then, I am suffering. Therefore, I am a very sorrowful person. Is this not a fact? This is the view of thoroughly ignorant persons. What do the enlightened teachers tell? In a very light manner, funny manner, they say, Advaita says, what did you say? So he says, I am suffering. I am experiencing suffering. Advaita says, whatever you are experiencing is not you. The man looks blank. What are you talking about? I am suffering so much. I have come for a solution. I thought you would help me. And you are, it looks as though you don't know the answer. And you don't want to appear as though you don't know. You are an agnani. And you are just trying to confuse me. Swami says, all right. Are you experiencing me? Sure. So, do you think that I am you? No. I am separate. You are separate. Do you see a table? Yes. So, do you think you are a table? No. Do you see a donkey? Yes. And do you think that you are a donkey? He says, no, of course not. So, are you experiencing suffering? Yes. Then why do you think I am suffering? Because whatever you are experiencing is not you. This is the first fundamental principle of Vedanta. Keep in mind, these are very important points, otherwise our talks will not be that enlightening. So then, the next moment we have to think something else. What is it? Supposing you are seeing a rose plant and it has a lot of blossoms and some of the roses are very fragrant, some are not that fragrant, some of the roses are very beautiful color. Some are not of good color. Do you see such a rose plant? Yes, I see it. So, Are you getting good smell from some of the roses? Yes, yes, I am getting very pleasant smell, fragrance. So tell me now, sir, is that fragrance belonging to you or does it belong to the rose? Of course it belongs to the rose. The sweetness of a mango, does it belong to you or does it belong to the mango? Of course it belongs to the mango. So that is the second fundamental principle of Vedanta, especially Advaita Vedanta. What is the first one? Whatever we experience, whatever I experience is not me. Whatever we experience is not us. Whatever you are experiencing is not you. And secondly, whatever qualities belong to any particular object that you are experiencing belong to that particular object. They do not belong to you. If the object itself doesn't belong to you, how can the things belonging to that object belong to you, become you? Suppose you see a rich man. A rich man has marvelous houses, cars, plenty of money, etc. So do you think I am that rich man? You may think I wish to be like that. That is a different issue. But you certainly know, not only that, you become sorrowful. Why do I not become like that? Why is God so cruel? Etc. etc. So anything you experience is not you. And anything that you experience, quality, wise, good, bad, and fragrant, non-fragrant, tasty, non-tasty, everything is a quality belonging to that particular object you are experiencing, and you don't, that belongs to that object. Therefore, you are not that object. So whatever belongs to that object also are not you. How does this analogy help me? Then the Swami explains. You say you are experiencing sorrow. Do you experience sorrow all the 24 hours a day? We have to be realistic and say, actually very little time we experience. Let us say, 7-8 hours we sleep. Do we experience sorrow at that time? Absolutely no. Suppose, even in that sorrowful condition, that you are watching a very, what is called, beautiful movie, in which you are terribly interested, tremendously interested. And do you keep your sorrow aside and then enjoy it or not? Yes, of course I do that. When you are eating very tasty food, are you not momentarily forgetting? Yes. So what is the third fundamental principle of Vedanta? The mind can entertain only one particular vritti, thought, at any given time. The question of experiencing two thoughts would never arise. That is the third fundamental principle of Vedanta. So when you are experiencing sorrow, you are not experiencing happiness. But at the same time, when you are experiencing sorrow, why do you have the knowledge this thought is a sorrowful thought? Because you are remembering that I had earlier happy thoughts. In contrast to them, this is a sorrowful thought. Vice versa. When you are happy, you are comparing it, contrasting it with something opposite. I many times mentioned this argument. This is a very important argument. However wonderful food you are, for example, enjoying, you can only enjoy, or your enjoyment is equal to the percentage of hunger you feel, not a bit more. So what is the fourth principle that we have to understand? The mind can only cherish one thought at a time. Therefore, you are not continuously thinking of one thought. And by any chance, if you can imagine, I make my mind fill with only one thought all the 24 hours. If you succeed, you know what happens? You are in samadhi. That tremendous power of keeping only one thought in the mind is called the ultimate fruit of billions and billions of births of spiritual practice. That is called samadhi. But there is also a psychological truth. You know what is that truth? Supposing you are continuously thinking of sorrow, one thought only, do you recognize that it is a sorrowful thought? Because unless the contrast is there, this point also I pointed out many times. What is that? That if you say this is cold, it is only in the background awareness of summer season, hot season, you are saying it is very cold. You can never understand who is a male unless you know who is a female. You can never understand what is happiness unless you know what is unhappiness. So, let us recollect four important truths of Advaita Vedanta. First, whatever we are experiencing is not us. Whatever I am experiencing is not me. Second, whatever qualities, gunas, that belong to any object, belongs to that object. In fact, you cannot recognize an object without qualities. Earlier also, classes we discussed, at least five descriptive models should be there. So we have seen jati, guna, kriya, sambandha, vastu, or dravya, or rudhi. Anything you want to describe, or to yourself also, not necessarily to other person. So these five qualities should be there. That is, it's called shabda pravrutti. But Brahman doesn't fall under any of these five categories, and therefore nobody can know whether Brahman exists or not. So any object is also exactly the same. So any quality, why did I raise this point? That whenever we are experiencing an object, actually we are not experiencing the object, we are experiencing the gunas. And a combination of these gunas we call by a particular name, by a particular form. Form means the gunas. And they say this is a mango, this is a tree, jati. And a mango fruit looks like that. And this particular species, it is sweet, it is of such size, such color, such flavor, etc., etc. So this is a fundamental point. Whatever we are experiencing, that is not me. Whatever I am experiencing as gunas of that object, belong to that object, not to me. Third, the mind can entertain, cherish only one particular thought, and that thought will not remain even 1 millionth of a second. It is going on changing. And fourthly, if we are by any chance experiencing one particular thought, say for example, you want to think I am sorrowful, you will not know very soon what is sorrowful, because there is no contrast, there is no opposite second thought, you will not even know what you are experiencing. So in today's class, I have been speaking these things beautifully. So coming back again, what Shankara wants to say is that from Brahman's point of view there is no creation, only from our mind's point of view there is creation, and from our viewpoint in creation is full of opposites, good and bad, and this creation is a concept in our mind, and we never complain when we are happy. We always complain either vocally or silently and struggle to get out. How do we know we are complaining? Because struggle. Nobody, even a small discomfort, one small part of the body, say a bit of the toe, has come on winter night outside the blanket or quilt, and immediately you dry it inside. But even if hours and hours of happiness is there, not only you will not think of withdrawing, that is our nature. So when we are experiencing this world, that means there is a problem with me, with my mind. Instead of seeing Brahman, I am seeing what I developed, a peculiar lens through which I see everything. This is called flawed angle. So the purpose of life is to get out of the mind. Then what remains is pure Brahman, even though that is a word we are using, it doesn't really apply. So, for our sake, the scripture comes down to our level and tells us, yes, 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 you are seeing a snake. So seeing the creation like seeing a snake. And it is frightful. Yes, 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 it is frightful. So this scripture agreeing with our view is called Adhyaropa. Scripture accepting that the world is real, that is the first step. Second step is to think that everything depends upon your mind. That is then only Adhyaropa. Every Tom, Dick and Harry doesn't feel that this world is Adhyaropa. Only a spiritual aspirant feels like that. And the purpose of the scripture is by calming our mind. So, is there any way I can escape suffering? Nobody ever asks again. Is there any way to escape happiness? Never. Even the smallest happiness. The scripture tells, assuredly, definitely, there is a way that we can escape permanently, not only temporarily. Temporarily there are many means. Permanently we can escape. Oh, wonderful, marvelous. So can you tell me how to escape? Yes. So you have to change your lifestyle. Start believing. Japa means what? Believing God exists. Believing God is real. God alone is real. Believing that if I can surrender myself, then God will be gracious. To the extent I surrender means to the extent I allow God's grace to enter into me, to that extent I progress in spiritual life. So then slowly a time will come. The teacher tells, these are all your thoughts. You superimposed these thoughts. What is the way out? You superimpose real thoughts. And what are the real thoughts? The scripture will give me the real thoughts. Substitute our thoughts with scriptural thoughts, and there is a way to do that. All sadhana margas show us that one, and slowly as we become purified, purity means removing our ajnana slowly, slowly, slowly. And then a time will come, then I say that the whole world is nothing but superimposed by me, and since I superimposed it, I alone am responsible to get rid of it, and I can get rid of it. There are proven methods to do that. And then one day I find I do not exist. Whatever exists is called God or Brahman. So for that purpose we have to think about God. And where is that God? You don't need to go anywhere. He is right within you, in the cave of your heart. We have seen in Chandogya Upanishad also. So anupravesha, finally. Entry of God means, just like, I will give an example again. Suppose you want to meet a person, and then you go to that place, and the gate man is standing there. You ask him, is Babu available? Yes, yes. Oh, you are fortunate. Just only 1 minute back, he entered into his office. So you can meet him. What is the purpose of this information? He entered there. That means he is available for you to interact with him. That is the final purpose of this anupravesha. God entered, Brahman entered. Tad srishtva tadeva anupravishat. So this is the essence. If we understand this, these few points, we have progressed in our intellectual understanding very much actually. Okay. So that much is marvelous. And now, how did Brahman manifest? As I said, from Advaitic viewpoint, how is Brahman manifesting to our eyes? So he became the manifest, the unmanifest. He became with support, without support. He is the truth of the waking state. He is the truth of the Vyavaharika. Is the truth of the Prativasika, but these are all temporary truths. They can help us, they can hinder us. The real truth is, he is Paramarthika Satya. So these are the viewpoints, and this world is there as a staircase for us slowly to transcend, as we discussed, from the Annamaya to Pranamaya to Manomaya to Vijnanamaya to Anandamaya. then like the robber, with sattva-guna shows that this is a forest, but your house is there. And we see, where is our house? Then we start moving towards our own house, which is safe, secure, and full of bliss. We will talk about these things in our next class. Om Jananim Shardam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritvaha Pranamami Muhur Muhuhu. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.